when we go through traumas or hardships or something as a child or as an adolescent, if it's not something we have processed through fully, which I just want to give you space to know, that's okay if you haven't. Like, this is normal.
Welcome to the Dr. Espen podcast, where we explore the latest in quantum science, personal development, consciousness and spirituality, health, as well as business and money mastery. Join me as I interview experts from all over the world sharing the most incredible stories of transformation. This is where we provide you with the exact tools and coaching activities you need to expand your consciousness in each of the 8 areas of your life. For more info on our events, programs, coaching, etc., go to drespen.com for the full quantum experience. Welcome, everybody. Welcome back to the Dr. Espen podcast. I am Espen. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Danielle Ray Daniel, a doctor of clinical psychology and a licensed clinical social worker. Today, we're going to have a conversation around how to improve our mental and emotional well-being, how to understand trauma, what trauma means in your life, how it takes effect, what we can do about it. We're going to have the conversation around PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome or disorder. And we're also going to dive into how we can live in incredible lives with equilibrated thoughts and equilibrated emotions. Dr. Danielle's studies across different modalities now, particularly, as I said, trauma, suicidal ideation, and crisis intervention. She's a published author, speaker, and researcher. She works with high-risk populations among adolescents, actively and retired military. So this is really useful for you if you are one of those, or specifically, if you know someone that might have been affected by PTSD or trauma. Now, this is, of course, not going to be any clinical advice, but it's going to be a real powerful deep dive into how we can live magnificent lives, mentally, emotionally, and so on and so forth. Dr. Danielle founded the Holistic Brain Institute. She's been working with patients and clients for over 2 decades. And also today, we'll talk about, which is an interesting topic, stay tuned for this, the power of aromatherapy and essential oils when it comes to mental health, something that I'm not very versed with, but certainly super excited to learn more about. So let me start by saying, welcome, Dr. Danielle. How are you this morning?
Hello, welcome. Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here with you. I'm doing great. I'm joining you from Hawaii.
Hawaii, and certainly not the morning where you are. That's awesome. Just quickly, with your experience now over 2 decades in mental health with trauma, PTSD, what are some of the challenges that you see trends? You know, people come into you and over again, you realize there is something going on that might be relevant for the listeners and viewers. What are some of the challenges that they might be facing? Before we can talk about overcoming those challenges, maybe we can identify what those are.
Yeah, that's a good way to start. So I would say one of the things we have really evolved in within the mental health world and recognizing is that there's 2 types of trauma. You have a single incident trauma, and trauma type 2 is multiple incidences. And that's usually what we see. So beforehand, when you're dealing with a PTSD diagnosis, for example, it used to be thought that, okay, someone that's, for example, in the military, they go in, they, you know, experience a lot of trauma, and there is PTSD. However, what we're finding is that people have a background of trauma from childhood, and then you come together and go into the military, and then you have complex PTSD. So trauma that has evolved from your childhood that's carried on and continued into your career, into adulthood, or into seeking those relationships or those scenarios that actually repeat your trauma. So it's a complex situation. I think that's one of the biggest evolutions that has helped in the mental health field to understand that it's layered. It's layered to deal with what's coming up from us, either from childhood, a single incident, or multiple incidents as a child, then as an adult, and continuing to either repeat that cycle or have an event that re-traumatizes.
Great. Or straight into it. I love this. In some of my teachings, in my events and seminars, I talk about the imprint period and how important it is to understand the first years of life, 1 to 7, or give or take, and what that means to our blueprint of reality, what we believe about it. And of course, also this very important conversation around trauma. What have you found in terms of working with patients and people across many different avenues when it comes to the trauma starting in early childhood in the imprint period and how relevant that is for healing in general?
It's usually, I would say 99%, 0.9% relevant from when you were a child. And I'll give you a little example. We just had these pretty devastating fires here in Hawaii on the island of Maui. And when I went over to do crisis counseling immediately, I'm involved with people who have lost their homes, lost friends, lost family, lost their animals, lost their post office. I mean, they just, everything is gone and they're dealing with a lot of grief. But what was interesting in that crisis moment that I'm speaking with people, they're having grief come up from years before. Grieving again over loss from a spouse or loss of something that happened many, many years before, but it compounds. So emotions are emotions. It doesn't exactly matter. Like, I don't have to go through the exact same thing that you do to understand the feeling of loss. The things that I have felt from loss or grief or from trauma is similar to, you know, the emotion to what other people experience. So usually, when we're dealing with a trauma, like that complex trauma as an adult, it does stem from childhood. Now, another thing with development that I think is very interesting that probably ties into what you're asking me is for when we go through traumas or hardships or something as a child or as an adolescent, if it's not something we have processed through fully, which I just want to give you space to know, that's okay if you haven't. Like, this is normal. All of us as adults are on the personal healing journey, right? But if you haven't processed something, you will tend to behave in a way regarding the situation as you did when that trauma first happened. That's why, like, maybe you run into someone who behaves like a 14-year-old in certain situations. Like, they haven't developed past that 14-year-old age to handle things more as an adult. And so it will continue to repeat and you'll continue to find situations, right? You attract those situations to repeat them until you address them and look at them and heal and forgive and all of those types of things.
This is awesome. And I think this is really, really relevant because when we understand that, you know, our blueprint of reality has pain, trauma, unresolved emotions, it does make sense how that would continue to repeat itself, quote unquote, kind of like from the unconscious mind until we deal with it. What are your thoughts on subconscious patternings, people realizing that they're not behaving in life the way they want to? They have habits, addictions, challenges in life that they have an intention to let go of, but they're still finding that they're stuck. How much of that could be related to unconscious programming or traumas of the past, do you think?
Well, I think they're 100% related. And I also want to give space that when you do have a trauma cycle, for example, in PTSD, there are many neurological things going on, but one of the core pieces is the maladaptively cycling HPA axis, so that your hypothalamus, pituitary, and adrenal gland continuing to cycle over and over and not stopping. And so that then wreaks havoc all over many other systems in the body and brain. So addictions, for example, as well, you have endogenous, like internal neurochemicals that fire, as well as if you're taking an external substance, and then that wreaks havoc on different things. So it will continue to repeat. And I just want to also acknowledge that there are neurochemical imbalances that happen from repeated programming or whatever it is. So yes, your subconscious is going to play into attracting those scenarios. But the good news is I always like to look at things as that will continue to repeat until we address and deal with it, but it's all there for a learning experience for us. And everything is learnable. Everything is overcomable. And I always like to have that perspective that you're not doing something wrong. There's not something wrong with you. You have this bad programming you had as a child, this fear instilled because you had a evil stepfather or whatever in my case, right? So it's just, hey, what can I learn from that? How can I address that? How can I hold a space? And I know I'm going into the healing aspect, but I never want it to sound like, oh, well, you're kind of, you know, messed up. You know, I think we all come down here to experience the mess up and experience how to overcome that.
I love how you just put the spiritual sense on this. We all come down here, and then you use the word attract. What have you seen in terms of working with patients now for 2 decades in terms of resolving trauma from perhaps that spiritual aspect that we are not just the body or the mind? You mentioned that we attract things, right? What's your hypothesis on who we are and what it means to attract traumas to learn these lessons and have these experiences?
I go to PTSD because that's my expertise and I have an expertise in diagnosing that, but it's a multifaceted diagnosis, meaning there are tons of symptoms that come with PTSD. It's like the whole gamut with PTSD, and it also takes a multifaceted approach. So I want to kind of back up with part of your question is the treatment process I have seen is not one treatment. It's definitely a multifaceted approach, meaning the spiritual, meaning the physical, the evidence-based therapies for sure. My forte is in understanding brain science and essential oil chemistry. So utilizing plants, plant medicine, as well as diet, all these things can really help bring harmony and equilibrium back to the body in that healing process. So I have seen when people implement multiple modalities and utilize them, meditation, yoga, just all sorts of things, they really can get a handle back on that trauma. And that's one aspect of it. The other aspect, like the attraction piece, what I have found works the best in all general sense is accepting and acknowledging that you can learn from this and that you weren't a victim. I find that the victim mindset is what keeps people attracting victim circumstance. So, and sometimes it's a hard pill to swallow. Like I attracted this and that's okay. Like you can forgive yourself. You don't have to be mad about it. And I wanted this experience for some reason. And it doesn't mean it was okay that if it was, I want to be sensitive to, you know, abuse and attack and things that happen that you're like, I would not really want this, but, and I guess I'm going to go a little deeper here. I was abused as a child. And when I came to all of these layers of healing and forgiveness, I think the thing that released me the most is when that I realized, well, some reason I did choose to go through this experience because I knew who I would become because of it. So I turned it around instead of being a victim. And I think that's what helped me the most was saying, okay, I took responsibility and I was young. I was a total tiny child. So it's not like I consciously chose, but maybe, you know, before coming down or however that looks for your spiritual, you know, awareness, but coming down, I said, I'm okay. I'm willing to go through these hard experiences. I know I'll be subject to them, but I'm willing to because I know who I'll become because of it. And that was empowering. That was a whole nother layer of forgiveness as well as just healing for me.
This is absolutely glorious. I love this. And, you know, in my introductory event, I ask my students a question. I get everyone to close their eyes and take a breath and feel into their hearts. And then I give them two possible scenarios. And I say, neither scenario is right or wrong. It's simply a matter of what you believe. So I explain scenario one, which is for you, if you believe that you're only flesh and bone, that you only are matter, you only are the body, and that's it. That's scenario one. Or scenario two, if you believe that there's more to you than just the physical, such as a spirit, a soul, or some sort of consciousness, something more than just the physical. Then I get, you know, our students to feel. And we can do this right now if you're listening, if you have not been to any of the work that we do. Just decide, what do you believe about yourself? Either scenario one, you're only matter, you're only physical, or scenario two, there's more to you than that, perhaps a spirit, soul, source, or consciousness. What's interesting, Danielle, is 99% plus of our students, they raise their hand and they believe that they're more than just the physical. And so this could potentially help tie in what you're saying right now, because the spiritual, the consciousness aspect of coming into human form, having a temporary human experience, is like the eternal embodied in temporary time. If the person believes that, or if you want to go deeper, if a person maybe does not believe that but want to believe it, we can change the belief. And if we do believe that we now are, you know, spirit having a human experience, then what you said, I think, is hand in glove, because then you didn't come into this human experience just to suffer meaninglessly. Perhaps you came to learn something that you had set out prior, or at least, you know, since you can't change the past, you can change the meaning. And the meaning is, yes, that happened for me so that I could now be a doctor of psychology and change the lives of people across the planet, including the devastation and the pain through the fires, because I had that experience as a young girl, because I was abused. And we take it to the point where our students continue to get to a point of wholehearted gratitude for the trauma of the past, because it happened for them, not to them. So hopefully that's helpful for some people watching and listening as to what it is that you believe. And once we've established that, okay, there is trauma in the unconscious mind, and or maybe it is actually become conscious for you, who knows? What are some of the steps that we take after that? Would we need to decide to do something about it? What do you find works best for the patients that you've worked with over the years?
Mm-hmm. So once you're on that journey, what I was going to mention, kind of piggybacking on that, is one of the things that we find that help people be the most resilient. So resiliency is something that we try to measure as best as you can. And one of the things that's a huge factor in recovery from even, you know, drug addiction, we have AA, we have resiliency, we have overcoming with PTSD, but it is a spiritual belief or foundation. Mm-hmm. In something greater than yourself. That is a major factor in any type of recovery. I mean, that's when you go to AA, it's really focused on, you know, having a higher power that can help you, and that we're not in this human experience alone. I like how you put that. So I agree on that. So once you can kind of tap into that higher power experience, knowing that you're not alone, right? You're not in this alone. You have tools to overcome it. And I wanted to go back to when something traumatic happens, and I want to use maybe the example of rape, for example, forgiving it and also coming to a point where you said, okay, some reason I went through this to learn. It doesn't mean that it was okay for that person to do that. I don't want to write that off. Oh, it's okay. It's not. Mm-hmm. It's a violation of spiritual laws that that person will have to pay and come to their own cleansing for. Like, that's their own journey. It doesn't mean it's okay, but our journey is our own healing. And I just want to make sure we acknowledge that it's not okay that it happened, but you are okay and you will be okay. And that experience will make you even better than before. And I have found that with me. I have found that with many of the others. So as we're healing, right? So we come to this acknowledgement, we're constantly, as things are coming up for us, there are lots of coping mechanisms that we can use to help us along that journey that can facilitate the recovery. It's a lifelong. I'll say for me, I remember, I mean, 20 years or so of just really having to work on a lot of my abuse. And the pinnacle for me was when I was able to accept and fully believe and felt so much gratitude, like you were talking, this gratitude. Wow, I'm grateful I got to go through this experience and be who I am because of it. That was a pinnacle where to now the abuse doesn't bother me at all. I'm like so open and just loving towards it and about it. I haven't seen the abuser, which is actually, you know, fine with me. And I trust the universe. If I were to see it, it would be what I needed, but hopeful it's not something I'm seeking, I could say. So anyway, within that, there's a lot of different modalities. I want to go into some of the coping mechanisms here. So journaling, yeah. Therapy, having a therapeutic technique or somebody you can talk to, because things will come up. A community, is a big one. Having a community that is service minded, and that could be a religious community. It could be just you going to do service with other people in a community. Having those spiritual beliefs is another coping mechanism. Physical exercise, meditation. And then lastly, I'll just say the essential oils, which I know will go into how those even facilitate in your recovery.
Beautiful. Well, there you have it, guys. There are evidence-based methodologies that you could apply. And I think, you know, if I was to look at that and say, is how relevant is this for every single person? Trauma or no trauma? And I don't even know if you could find a living person that's an adult today that has not had trauma, but to different various degrees. But either way, physical exercise, having someone to talk to, having a community, meditating regularly, exercise, and all these things that we talked about. For me in my life, it's just non-negotiable. And I don't do it to only heal from trauma, even though that's the conversation that we're having. And of course, it's critical to do those things, I feel, if you have those trauma or you're dealing with PTSD or other similar conditions. But moreover, for the average person also listening, these aren't just tools to be applied, even though they're evidence-based methodologies or clinical applications for trauma, but they're also fundamentals for life in terms of meditation is a necessity. Physical exercise is a necessity. Clean nutrition is a necessity. So wherever you might sit on the spectrum, my two cents worth is that these are powerful tools nonetheless. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, they invite peace. They invite you to be in the present. Trauma is the past. Depression is ruminating on past. Anxiety is future anticipation. So these modalities help you stay in the present moment. They invite peace. They invite joy. They just invite you to quiet all the noise and to just get in touch with that real, true, powerful spiritual self that you are. And through this process, I think the biggest tool for me from, you know, healing from my own trauma and also helping others, my main focus in my therapy that I've done with teens is self-love. Mm-hmm. What you can offer as far as like love and gentleness and kindness and just not being harsh and critical and I should be here or don't should on yourself, but all of these things, just that is what's going to propel your healing. And it's also how you end up treating others. The more you can love and not be hard on yourself or judgmental on yourself or all of those things there. I have days sometimes where I'm just like, I have so much that I could do. I should do, you know, shooting on myself. And I'm like, I just don't want to, I'm just in a bad mood. And when I'm gentle on myself and I just say, you know what? I love myself enough just to allow myself to be in a bad mood today. That's okay. My bad mood switches so much quicker than if I'm like, oh, and you know, trying to beat myself up. So I guess the point of all those modalities is that it allows you to be in the present and allows you to give this moment of just gentleness and kindness for yourself that does facilitate the healing.
This is very powerful. I have, as I've studied human behavior now for many years, I've really seen it all boil down, you know, to a few things at the core of a lot of issues and at the core of a lot of transformation and healing. And I would say at the very core of it, this self-love piece is absolutely one of the you know, even the top three, so put it that way. So can you talk a little bit more about self-love? And because I think sometimes, particularly people, quote unquote, stuck in the masculine, think that that's something that is not relevant. People in countries like Australia, I don't know how much it's relevant in America, but also in Norway, where I'm from, it's a little bit of, you know, the tall poppy syndrome. Don't love yourself, humble yourself, and don't put yourself out there and put exclamation towards one's brilliance or so on and so forth. So there's this self-minimization process in certain cultures. And I feel from having seen this over and over again, I am just saddened that there is so often a lack of self-love. And you can say, yeah, I love myself, but to truly do what you said and give space, give time, give grace, appreciation and love for the self, how important is it? And how can we begin to take that next step in that self-love journey?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I think that it is something that we have as a deficit, self-love deficit in our world. And there's a lot of pseudo things that people do, like for self-love, to like puff yourself up and say that you love yourself, but that's not really self-love. Is this just a gentleness? You can make a mistake and that's okay. It's different than I made a mistake and I'm fine. Like, it's not an ego. It's completely opposite of ego. I'm reminded of, you know, I don't know whether you have scriptural background, whatever works for you, but I do like this scripture that talks about like the second most important commandment is that, you know, the first is that you love God. And the second is that you love your neighbor as thyself. And what I remember when I was thinking about this and I was like, okay, well, why would the second commandment not be to love yourself? I feel like that's more important. Then I realize it is in there, to love your neighbor as thyself. You can't love anybody else more than you do love yourself. And when you look at self-love completely void of ego, some people do things that they are pretending are self-love, but it still has the ego in it. And I guess, you know, for lack of a better description, ego is obviously egotistical, self-serving in that sense, but at the cost of another.
Mm-hmm.
And self-love is opposite of that. It's, I love myself enough that if you are saying mean things to me, I know that those mean things are just things you repeat to yourself. And I feel for you and I have this love for you. I'm not taking them personal. So that's just one example. So I have had, as far as like how to develop more self-love, it is a journey. I've had a very long journey with it myself. I'm sure as many have. Many of us have different backgrounds. As a child being abused, I felt like there was something wrong with me. I internalized that I wasn't good enough and that's why this happened to me. And so I didn't like think of it consciously. I just knew that's what it was, that's what it was. And anytime things bad happen, I just say, yeah, that's just because I'm not as special as them. And I just kind of like repeated that as a belief system. And I had to little by little consciously catch that belief system, so consciously look at it, and then consciously have to tell myself, no, that's not true. I am special. And so it took layers of doing that. And then it became behaviors that I would do to allow myself space and time to just be okay. Like I was doing, for example, be in a bad mood. That's okay. I just might need that. I might need to be angry right now and hold on to this and not let it go. Where before I would be mad. Oh, I need to let it go. I need to forgive, you know, all the need to, the have to, the shoulds. Once I can let those go and allow myself whatever learning journey that I need. Oh, it transformed for me when I was able to do that.
Beautiful. Thank you for speaking to the self-love piece with grace, with gentleness, and appreciation. And of course, that unconditional love, not egoic, but true love for self. This is really fundamental. So listeners, viewers, please take this moment to perhaps take a breath and feel into what it would mean for you to treat yourself with even more self-love and appreciation. This is going to emanate from your being and affect everyone around you, including the people that you love. I think this is really, really key. Okay, let's segment over. I've got a couple more questions for you. I want to learn a bit more about the whole notion that the aromatherapy and the essential oils for mental health, maybe you even can tell us, you know, the top three ones that you use. How does it work? Why is it so important? And what have you found?
Yeah, that's great. Well, I'll kind of segment it with just in the self-love talk as well. So essential oils aren't going to change necessarily the way you feel like for like loving yourself. But what they will do is they help work at the neurochemical level. And they're going to, if I'm in a crazy stressed out moment, I've had, you know, recently where I was really triggered. One of my friends, we were somewhere and they invited someone else to go with them and not me. And I was sitting next to them and I'm like, why didn't she invite me? And it like triggered this self, you know, lack of self-love for something in myself. And I was really upset at the moment and I knew it. I took full responsibility. She's not a bad person for doing that. I'm triggered. I grabbed an essential oil that I had, actually grabbed a sandalwood at the moment, and I inhaled it. And it, like, the swarm of what was rising in me neurochemically calmed down. And it allowed me to, like, stop being so upset and then think through the conversation, think through the trigger, release that trigger, talk it out. And it was just, so they kind of help bring you back down to a harmony, we could say. And then you still have to choose consciously what you want to think and believe. I can use an essential oil for anxiety or anxious feelings, but then I still want to think anxious thoughts. It's going to continue to create the neurochemistry going on. So that's just a little, you know, tidbit on that, but I can explain how they work in the brain and go more into, but I'll give you a chance to say something.
That's awesome. Okay. So what are the top oils for the different things that people could use?
Yes. So, well, it kind of depends on what you're using them for. So one thing is when you inhale an essential oil, it travels straight to the brain through neural olfactory pathways, and it just penetrates right in there and it'll start to interact with neurotransmitters. It doesn't force an effect like medication would, for an example. It's really going to be modulating is what we call it, but like harmonizing in the brain. So you can apply them like inhaling, you can apply it topically. And there are oils that help boost mood. That's going to be your citruses. So you would use some type of citrus. Bergamot is probably my favorite. I did my dissertation on PTSD and bergamot. So that would be a boosting. And then if you want to calm, like if you're in a heightened state and you're having maybe anxiety or ADHD, something going on, then you would want a calming essential oil. And that's going to be something like ylang ylang, which comes from a flower in Madagascar. And so it's like this causes the calming sensation in your brain. For PTSD and trauma, I chose bergamot. And so that's the essential oil that I used in my studies, because bergamot showed that it helped at the HPA access level and it helped to restore the HPA access from overcycling. And that's our biggest, you know, at the core, the biggest issue with trauma or PTSD and stress in general. So we used bergamot and had wonderful effects from just the bergamot on all, like a lot of the symptoms of PTSD.
Awesome. I mean, talk about plant medicine. They say all disease is created and all disease can be cured if you really look to nature. And I think this is so important. I mean, look at the incredible amount of medicine that is out there that has not been tapped into yet. And I think, as I say, I've got many essential oils, a whole range of them here on my desk that I use regularly for different reasons. And I just think the word essential is important to keep in mind here when it comes to essential oils. Definitely something to look into. Okay, I've got a question for you. I'd like to really throw this in there. And it's my last question. But before I do, I want to ask, is there anything else on these very important topics that you'd like to share for our listeners and viewers?
I guess then wrap the conversation is just being patient with yourself and through the process. And that's why I like you utilizing the essential oils as the trigger comes. I just use something. And I do want to talk to, I guess, quality of essential oils. Not all essential oils are alike. This is what I study is really medicinal compounds. So if you have an essential oil that doesn't have those medicinal compounds, it's not going to have the same effect. And so I think that's an important piece, that also some from stores might have synthetics, toxins, and other things in them, and you don't want to expose yourself. So I think that's an important piece, is having a testing report that shows you that it's pure and not adulterated and that it has the compounds in it. I have a lot of courses and things like that on this. So if any questions, you can reach out. But I guess, yeah, just being patient and gentle and just kind with yourself in the process and not expecting it overnight, and utilizing the aromatherapy to help guide you along that process and bring you back down to like a harmony to cope with things.
Yeah. And you mentioned the scriptures before, and you know, the three wise men and their gifts to Jesus were indeed some of the tools that you've mentioned. Something to
myrrh, frankincense.
And a little bit of gold, I believe. Yeah. So like very, very powerful. Okay, so we're going to talk about your websites and Instagram, where people can go and get more information in a moment. I think this is important. But just in general, are there any certain brands or types that you think work better than others? Just because I know a lot of people will be thinking, hang on, I like essential oils, or I'd like to get into it. Where can I go? What do I stay away from? Mm-hmm. Any ideas?
Yeah, of course. So I think the number one thing is, if you have a brand that you like, I would just ask the company for their GCMS testing. And if they can share that with you, if they can't share that with you, that's probably a red flag. but you want to make sure it says, you know, in the testing that it's not adulterated. So the company that I found that I can go look up all the lot numbers. And so when I did my dissertation, I chose Bergamot and I took Bergamot and I looked up the lot number and I was able to print out the GCMS testing report. And from that testing report, I was able to see that it had the constituents in it that I needed and that it was not adulterated. And so I was like, okay, I can use this. I'm not going to put harm on any of these, you know, military personnel, firefighters and things. So I chose, because of that transparency with the company and availability, I chose the brand doTERRA.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got lots of oils from them as well. Excellent work. Okay. Here's our last question. You ready? Straight off the cuff.
Yep.
All right. I want you to now imagine, Dr. Danielle, that the whole world is watching and listening. Okay. Billions of people have shown up. They're here and they're tuning in to your message. When you're ready, take a breath and please go ahead and tell us, what is your message to the world right now?
That anything is possible. Anything is achievable.
Short, sharp, straight to the point. Set yourself the intention perhaps to believe that, and what you believe you will achieve. Anything is possible. Lovely. Okay. So I've got on Instagram, Dr. Danielle, that is DanieLePsyD. So Dr. Danielle Psyd, where else can people go to learn more about the work that you do?
Yeah. Instagram's a great place. Dr. Danielle Psyd, or my website, I have brainessentials.com, the holistic brain app. You can download that from your iTunes or your store, holistic brain app.
That is cool. The Holistic Brain app. I love that. Thank you so much again for your time. Thank you for the service that you're rendering to the people that need it. And thank you so much for speaking so openly about your own journey and about the tools that you've used to get to where you are now as a leader in the field. And perhaps also just my two cents worth on it. You know, if you're watching and listening and you've had trauma challenges, you've been diagnosed with something in your life, may Dr. Danielle be an example of what is possible to turn that trauma into transformation. I think that was a magnificent story. And again, we thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Privilege and a pleasure. Once again, thank you so much for listening. And if you want to learn more about how to walk the quantum path into life mastery, business mastery, if you want to learn more about our live events or coaching or anything that we offer, go to www.drespen.com. That's DRESPEN.com, or email info@drespen.com. And let's find out how we can help you take your life, your business, and your mission to a whole nother level. We'll see you next time.